All right, 2 Samuel chapter 12. 2 Samuel chapter 12. I want to notice the first part of verse 11 again as we continue through these consequences that David experiences the rest of his life, literally. When we make wrong, sinful choices, we don't know how much we're going to reap with that. So 2 Samuel 12, verse 11, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will, again, this is God's promise here, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house, and I will take thy wives before thine eyes and give them unto thy neighbor, and he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of the sun, for thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. Of course, David says to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. Now, as we move into chapter 13, again, I want for us to be reminded of that, because this is the continued reaping that David is experiencing here. And he's actually going to have two sons that actually take what he did and use or follow his example. Can I remind you, parents? Can I remind us, grandparents? Guess what? What we do, our children and our grandchildren will take and they will mimic. In fact, in many cases, they will pay attention to our negative examples more than they will our positives. I know that shouldn't be that way. But here's the point. Notice as we move into chapter 13, and it came to pass after this, all right, so after the Ammonites were defeated and so on, but after this, and after all those situations that David brought to pass with his sin, after this, that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin. And Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend. Better watch out. You better pay attention to the friends that you have. And in fact, I can guarantee if I pay attention to who your friends are, I'll tell you what you'll become in somewhere down the road. Amnon had a friend, but here's the complication of this friend. This was also a member of the family, distant relative, because you notice it says, whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very subtle man. It's very interesting. The Bible uses the same word as it does with the serpent in Genesis chapter 3. The serpent was more subtle than any other beast. Of course, a representation of Satan as he used that serpent. Verse 4. He said unto him, why art thou, being the king's son, lean from day to day? Wilt thou not tell me? And Amnon said unto him, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. And Jonadab said unto him, lay thee down on thy bed. Notice here's the scheme, here's the plan. And make thyself sick, you know, pretend to be sick. And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat, and dress the meat in my sight, that I may see it, and eat it at her hand. All right, so here's the scheme. Here's the plan. Now, I want you to notice again, first of all, that this Tamar is a half-sister. And as we understand in this passage, Amnon violates her purity. But here's what I want you to notice, though, and take notice. In fact, let's look back in chapter 3, verse 2. I think it's very interesting here how this all settles out here as far as David's consequences. It says in verse 2 of 2 Samuel chapter 3, and unto David were sons born in Hebron. And notice, his firstborn was Amnon of Ahinoam the Jezreelitess. And then you notice in verse 3, while we're here, notice the third son is Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. We'll be reminded of that here in a moment. So here's David's firstborn. And as we think about what Amnon does here, he follows his father's example. Remember it said back in chapter 11 that David saw Bathsheba and he took her. I want you to think about what Amnon is doing here. He's taking somebody and violating her. And of course, he afterwards, as this passage says, he hates her and refuses to make it right according to the law. Now, notice here verse 21. We're surveying down through these chapters here, but you notice it says, in fact, verse 19, Tamar put ashes on her head, ran her garment of divers colors that was on her, and laid her hand on her head, and went on crying. And Absalom, her brother, said unto her, hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? But hold now thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. But notice it says in verse 21, but when King David heard all these things, he was very wroth. And he made sure that justice was carried out. Is that what your Bible says? Notice what happens when we have guilt in our past. Notice when King David heard of all these things, he was very wroth. Now, this is very interesting. Remember after the story of Nathan, it says he was angry. He says, that man should die. He should restore fourfold. Notice here, all of a sudden, David's getting angry all the time at everything, but he doesn't do anything. Notice he does nothing about this. According to the law, Amnon should have died. But Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. Verse 23, and it came to pass after 2 full years. David did nothing for 2 full years. So guess what's happening here? Absalom has this eating away at him. Nothing is ever done to deal with this whole situation. So David gets very angry, very wrathful, but no justice is ever carried out because of his own sin and guilt. It says, notice that Absalom, after 2 years, Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. And Absalom came to the king and said, behold, now thy servant hath sheep shearers. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant. Now, I've not figured out why he wanted his father there, probably to make a statement to his father. I don't know, but of course the king said to Absalom, nay, my son, let us not all now go, lest we be chargeable unto thee. And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but blessed him. Then said Absalom, if not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said unto him, why should he go with thee? I have a feeling David is suspicious about something here. Of course, David has not dealt with this whole situation. And Absalom pressed him that he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Notice here, Absalom now follows his father's example by way of murder. It says here, Absalom had commanded his servants, mark ye now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine. That sounds very similar to chapter 11, doesn't it? And when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him, fear not, have not I commanded you. Be courageous and be valiant. Notice here, Absalom is not appealing to the king. He's taking the law into his own hands here at this point. And the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Notice then all the king's sons arose, and every man got him upon his mule and fled. They had no idea whether or not he was going to try to kill all of the sons, you know, all of David's sons or what. So they're fleeing. Of course, Absalom was in particular focused on Amnon. But notice here, here's in the fourfold payment here, here's son number two. David has already lost two sons now after 2 years. So the payment is continuing on here. So again, we see here all of this conflict as far as this household is concerned. It says in chapter 13, verse 37 then, that we see that Absalom flees. Verse 37, it says, but Absalom fled and went to Talmai. Remember we saw that in chapter 3. He went to Talmai, the son of Aminahud, king of Geshur, king of the Geshurites. And David mourned for his son every day. Now, I want you to notice the link here, the tie, back in 1 Samuel chapter 27. There's probably ill will between the Geshurites and David because of this event. Notice it says in 1 Samuel 27, verses 8 and 9. It says, and David and his men went up and invaded the Geshurites. So this is where Talmai was king. And the Gezrites, I should say, and the Amalekites. For those nations were of old the inhabitants of the land, as thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt, down in southwest Palestine. And David smote the land and left neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep and the oxen, the asses, the camels and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. This, of course, is when David was spending time with the Philistines. And then again, as a reminder, what we saw, 2 Samuel 3, it says that Absalom was the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. So again, we see here very clearly that Absalom now goes back to Grandpa, Talmai, king of the Geshurites. It says, David mourned for his son every day. It says here in verse 38 then of 2 Samuel 13, so Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. Right, so now we're talking 5 years past the time when Amnon violated his half-sister. And it says, the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. But notice, he did not act. He longed to go forth to Absalom. Now, evidently, apparently, David would have known where Absalom was. I don't know if there was communication somewhere along the way, servants or whatever. So he actually had a way to go to him, but notice he does not. Then as we move into chapter 14, notice verses 1 through 3, we see that Joab kind of gets involved here. Of course, Joab gets involved in a lot of things related to David. Now, Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman and said unto her, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner and put on now mourning apparel and anoint thyself with oil, but be as a woman that had a long time mourned for the dead. And come to the king and speak on this manner unto him. So Joab put the words in her mouth. I'm not going to look at all these verses here, but I want you to notice here in the context, it says in verse 6, it says, thy handmaid had two sons, and they strove together in the field, and there was none to part them, but the one smote the other and slew him. Obviously, she's referring to Amnon and Absalom. Well, as this story continues here in this account, David all of a sudden starts figuring out, it's like, is Joab putting you up to this? So she says, oh, you're like an angel of God. My Lord is the king to discern good and bad in verse 17. He figures out what this story is all about. So we see here that Joab is trying to arrange for this. It says here in verse 21, the king said unto Joab, behold, now I have done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again. So Joab fell to the ground on his face, bowed himself and thanked the king and so on. So notice it says here in verse 24, the king said, let him turn to his own house. All right, so Absalom comes back from Geshur. Notice verse 23, he comes to Jerusalem. Notice the king says, let him return to his own house. Let him not see my face. So all of a sudden, Absalom's thinking, wait a minute, why did I come back then? And this is going to start eating away at him. It says here at the end of verse 24, so Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. So David wants to go to Absalom, but yet there's something holding him back from reconciling this relationship with his son. Now, we have to look at this description here of Absalom. I am so thankful. I am so thankful. Maybe as a baby, someone might have said this about me, but I am so thankful nobody says, oh, you're so beautiful. A man usually doesn't want to hear that. I think it's very interesting how the Bible describes Absalom here. And so really, we could probably say he was a long-haired hippie as far as this culture is concerned. Verse 25, it says, in all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. So that kind of tells me as a teenager, he never had pimples. I mean, it's like, here's this perfect man. Well, he wasn't much of a man if they're talking about his beauty. There's every word in the Bible is there for a reason. The Bible emphasizes his beauty. It says in verse 26, and when he polled his head, anybody know what the word polled means? All right, talking about that. I had to look it up to make sure. I remember years ago when we were on staff in Ohio, we had a barber in the church membership, and I remember our pastor asking the barber, what does it mean to be polled? And cut his hair. Well, I wanted to make sure I knew exactly what the word polled means. It means to cut off the ends of the hair. So literally what happens here is that Absalom does not give himself a short haircut. No, he's trimming the ends. And you notice why here in verse 26. It says, when he polled his head, for it was at every year's end that he polled her. So he had one haircut a year. All right, men, imagine how long your hair might be after a year of not getting a short haircut. Because the hair was heavy on him, therefore he polled it. He weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight. So I decided to look up what the shekels in the Webster's 1828 dictionary, all it does is it talks about money. So literally what we're talking about here, of course, notice it says after the king's weight. So we're talking about 200 shekel coins. Sorry, so you get 200 coins together and see how much those coins will weigh. I need a trim. I mean, it's like he's walking around with this hair that's the equivalent of 200 coins. Verse 27, and unto Absalom there were born three sons and one daughter whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of fair countenance. Notice this again, how often Tamar comes through in various connections here, even back to Tamar in Genesis. So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem and saw not the king's face. So we're talking about years now after. Was this 7 years now after Amnon violated his half-sister? It says, therefore Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king. Now, I want you to notice Absalom's ways here. He does whatever he wants, whatever he thinks will get action. Notice, but he would not come to him. Joab would not come to him. My guess is Joab wouldn't go to Absalom because he had nothing else to say. If your dad doesn't want to see you, then what else can I do? I've already done what I can do. When he sent again the second time, he would not come. Verse 30, therefore he said unto his servants, see, Joab's field is near mine, and he hath barley there. All right, so evidently the barley was about ready to harvest. Go and set it on fire. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. That got Joab's attention. Verse 31, then Joab arose and came to Absalom unto his house and said unto him, wherefore have thy servants set my field on fire? And Absalom answered Joab, behold, I sent unto thee, saying, come hither, that I may send thee to the king to say, wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still. Now therefore let me see the king's face, and if there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me. Pretended innocence. He's already killed his half-brother here. So Joab came to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king, and notice, he bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. Now, I do not believe this was true reconciliation and forgiveness as far as Absalom is concerned, because notice the first word in chapter 15, and. Obviously, the and is tying this all together here. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, oh, of what city art thou? And he said, thy servant is of the one of the tribes of Israel. And Absalom said unto him, see, thy matters are good and right. You know, you have a just cause there, but there is no man deputed, in other words, a deputy of the king, to hear thee. Absalom said moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice. Well, if I was boss... How many times those kinds of statements are made? If I were boss, if I was the manager, if I was the supervisor, we'd see some justice around here. Notice, and it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him, Absalom the politician. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. Notice this statement at the end of verse 6. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. How many times over the years I've heard of assistant pastors doing this very thing in churches? We know of a church, in fact, a church that we were on staff at. Literally, the assistant pastor, years, literally split that church. Took, I think it was like 80 people, across town and started his own church, and it's now a rocking church the last I knew. He would have destroyed that church either way. Instead of moving out of town, moving somewhere else to start a church, he took people with him. Notice here, Absalom is stealing the hearts of the men of Israel. And it came to pass after 40 years, wait a minute, 40 years. I believe this is reference to David's kingdom. As I've studied this out, 40 years. I'll remind you that he was a king in Hebron for 7 years and 6 months. To give us a perspective here, this is 6 months before the end of David's life. Literally, he's talking now about, we're talking about 40 years. It says that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria. Notice Geshur, the Geshurites were in Syria, so it had been towards the north, saying, if the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. And the king said unto him, go in peace. And I want you to notice where he goes. So he arose and went to Hebron. Where did David start his kingdom? With Judah. In which place? Hebron. Notice here, he's following the pattern of his father here as he's trying to steal the kingdom from his father and king. Verse 10, it says here, but Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as ye hear the sound of the trumpet. So now notice he's doing this same type of tactic here as he's trying to establish himself as king. It says, the sound of the trumpet, then he shall say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron. So he's going to send messengers out making this announcement. And with Absalom went, notice, 200 men out of Jerusalem. And notice it says that they were called. Again, every word is important here. Notice he's inviting men to follow him. It says they went in their simplicity and they knew not anything. Now, wait a minute. There was no questions in their minds, evidently. No stopping to say, wait a minute, I thought King David was still king. Notice, they're not stopping to think about this. Notice they went in their simplicity, they knew not anything. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel. This is a very important transition in this story. Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Giloh, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. Now, I want you to notice here, it says in... I forgot the passage here. Chapter 23, 2 Samuel 23, verse 24. Or 34, I should say. 2 Samuel 23, verse 34. Notice that here it talks about Eliam, which we saw earlier in chapter 11 as Bathsheba's father, the son of Ahithophel, the Gilonite. I want you to notice here the significance of this situation here as far as Ahithophel. Very clearly we see in the Bible here that Ahithophel was David's counselor. But we see that Ahithophel is the grandfather of Bathsheba. And I believe he's been wanting an opportunity for years now to requite or repay David for the shame he brought upon his granddaughter. There's probably a reason why he acted as David's counselor, because notice again in verse 12 it says David's counselor, but he was not in Jerusalem, he was in Giloh at this time at least. It says in verse 13, and there came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. Verse 15, and the king's servant said unto David, behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint. It says the king went forth and all his household after him. Of course, then the king left 10 women, which were concubines, to keep the house. Verse 18, and all his servants passed on beside him. And notice here also the Kerethites and the Pelethites, these are David's personal guard, and all the Gittites, 600 men, which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king. Of course, many of these were reckoned as his mighty men of valor. So also we have an interesting introduction here as far as Ittai the Gittite. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, "Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also an exile. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and down with us, seeing I go whither I may? Return thou and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee." And Ittai answered. Notice Ittai's answer is very similar to Ruth's answer to Naomi. Ittai answered the king and said, "As the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be." So David said to Ittai, "Go and pass over." Ittai the Gittite passed over, and all his men, all the little ones that were with him. All the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. Now, it's very interesting. Notice with me verse 30 then. It says, "David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet and wept as he went up, and had his head covered, and he went barefoot." It's a symbol of mourning here. "And all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up," notice, "weeping as they went." Notice Luke chapter 22. What a perfect picture of our Lord Jesus Christ. Went up by the Mount Olivet. That should bring back some memories of what Scripture actually says in the New Testament. It says Luke 22, verse 39. Luke has some more details of this. All right, so this is David's heir to the throne, the Lord Jesus Christ. It says he came out and went, as he was wont, to the Mount of Olives, Mount Olivet. "And his disciples also followed him. And when he was at the place, he said unto them, Pray that ye enter not into temptation. And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. There appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And notice, being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground." Also notice to me Hebrews chapter 5. We mentioned also Mount of Olives is where Jesus ascended back to heaven. Hebrews chapter 5, notice verses 7 and 8. But as far as this weeping, it says they were weeping as they went. Hebrews chapter 5, verses 7 and 8. "Who in the days of his flesh," talking about Jesus, priest after the order of Melchizedek, "who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death and was heard in that he feared, though he were a son," notice, "yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered." As you go back to 2 Samuel 15, verses 24 and following talks about Zadok and all of that. He actually sends Zadok, the priest, back to Jerusalem. In verse 27 it says, "The king said to Zadok the priest, Art thou not a seer? Return to the city in peace, and your two sons with you." Verse 28, "See, I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until there come word from you to certify me." I checked the meaning of that word. It means to make certain, to make a declaration in writing, to give certain information to. So literally David is at this point saying, "All right, Zadok, I want you to be my eyes in Jerusalem." So he sends him back. And of course then they go on weeping. Verse 31, "And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom." And it says, "And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." Notice me, Psalm 55. This is a psalm that many believe comes from this time of David's life. So we're not talking about just Absalom, we're also talking about Ahithophel. And there's a statement here in Psalm 55 that gives us a clue as to what this is about. Psalm 55, notice verse 1 and following. So as David is fleeing, think about this, they're weeping as they flee. Verse 1, it says, "Give ear to my prayer, O God, and hide not thyself from my supplication." Remember, David just prayed, as we saw, to destroy the counsel of Ahithophel. Turn it into foolishness. Verse 2, "Attend unto me and hear me. I mourn in my complaint and make a noise. Because of the voice of the enemy, because of the oppression of the wicked, for they cast iniquity upon me, and in wrath they hate me. My heart is sore pained within me, and the terrors of death are fallen upon me." Notice the descriptions here, the descriptive phrases here as far as David and his servants fleeing. "Fearfulness and trembling are come upon me. Horror hath overwhelmed me." In fact, I believe Psalm 3 is a follow-up of this, as he was finally able to sleep, resting in the Lord. It says, "I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove, for then I would fly away and be at rest." Notice his desire to escape from these trials. "Lo, then I would wander far off and remain in the wilderness, Selah. I would hasten my escape from the windy storm and tempest. Destroy, O Lord, and divide their tongues. For I have seen violence and strife in the city. Day and night they go about upon the walls thereof. Mischief also and sorrow are in the midst of it." Notice the description of what's going on in Jerusalem here. "Wickedness is in the midst thereof. Deceit and guile depart not from her streets." Notice this explanation. "For it was not an enemy that reproached me. Then I could have borne it. Neither was it he that hated me that did magnify himself against me. Then I would have hid myself from him. But it was thou, a man mine equal." Notice, "my guide and mine acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked unto the house of God in company." And then he calls out to the Lord, "Let death seize upon them," and so on. Drop down to verse 22. So this is a prayer, but then he offers a challenge to those who read this. "Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved." So in the midst of Absalom leading this rebellion, in the midst of his private counselor, Ahithophel, turning after Absalom, notice in the midst of all this, he's calling out to God for help. Then you notice here in verse 32. I want to show you that the Lord actually gives him an answer immediately. "And it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount, where he worshipped God," notice, where he was worshipping God, "behold, Hushai the Archite came out to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head, unto whom David said, if thou passest on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me." I'm going to have another mouth to feed, Hushai. You know, I'm glad you want to go with me, but if you and your household goes, I have more mouths to feed here. But notice, verse 34, "But if thou return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king. As I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant. Then mayest thou be thou for me, defeat the counsel of Ahithophel." So here's Ahithophel turning on David, and David says, "I want you to go back and, you know, deal with the counsel that Ahithophel will give in this situation." Verse 35. "And hast thou not there also with thee Zadok and Abiathar the priests? Therefore it shall be that what things soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, thou shalt tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. And by them ye shall send unto me everything that ye can hear." So notice, Hushai, David's friend, came. Notice, David's friend came into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. Now, as we move into chapter 16, we see Ziba here meets up with David. Notice, he's the servant of Mephibosheth. And I'm just going to drop this for now, mentioning this, that David actually takes the side of Ziba in this instead of Mephibosheth. Remember, Mephibosheth is actually crippled on his feet. And Ziba, as we see here, he takes off, and notice it says here in verse 3, "And the king said, where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem." This is an outright lie. "For he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. Then said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertain unto Mephibosheth. Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king. He's betrayed Mephibosheth, and now he's bowing and kissing the feet of David. But here's what happens. David actually divides up the land that he had given to him. He divides it up and gives Ziba half, and Mephibosheth keeps half. So what's David doing with that? He's saying, I don't trust you, Mephibosheth. Think about this. He's listening to a deceiver, someone who's betrayed somebody. He doesn't believe Mephibosheth at all. In fact, as I was reading something from B.H. Carroll on this, he said this is one of the darkest decisions that David ever made. I never really thought about that, but he literally turns on somebody that he had befriended years before. But I want you to think about it as we tie all this together. Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8 is the theme that I'm carrying throughout these chapters. David is reaping horribly. And I wonder sometimes if David is probably not thinking at this point, if I had only known. If I had only known all I was going to deal with in those moments of sin. If I had only known. That's never happened to any of us, right? If I had really thought about what we would have done things differently. I wonder how many times over those years David said, if I had only known it was going to get this bad, I would have done something differently. Lord, I pray that you'd help us to learn this lesson from King David. Lord, that when we sow to the flesh, we reap corruption. And in many ways, we reap more than we ever thought. Lord, help us to remember this lesson. In Jesus' name, amen.